Oh, there's no question that the very fact that young women have the same opportunity in college, that they have a chance to play sports because of Title IX, that they have the right to terminate a pregnancy that doesn't make sense in their life or for the life of a child. The fact that we have equal opportunity in the workplace, all those things would never have happened if those of us who were participants of the women's movement had not been there and fought so hard.
Turning outrage into outcomes. This is the Texas Blue Action Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Texas Blue Action Podcast. I'm excited to be here today because we got some fantastic news yesterday, which was that the CDC is now recommending vaccines for children age 5 to 11. I am a mother of two children that fit in that age group, and I would be lying if I didn't say that after I booked those appointments yesterday, I had an incredibly emotional response to that opportunity and just felt so grateful that it was finally here. And so I can't think of a more timely conversation than the one we're about to have. And so I'd like you to welcome my guests, Jenny Sue, who is a part of Immunize Texas. She is also running for the Texas Land Commissioner, and it's one of these days we're gonna have her back to talk about that. And then we also have a pediatrician who is also a mother. In fact, both of my guests today have children under the age of 12, so this does very much affect them as well. But she's a pretty pediatrician and a doctor, Jyoti Kapoor. And, you know, Jyoti, let's start with you, and I would love to hear from you what this decision means for our community and for children that you're seeing in your practice, and how this is going to help us move forward in this pandemic.
Thank you for having me. I am so excited with the vaccine coming out. We have been waiting as pediatricians. We have been waiting and waiting and waiting. We do have one more stage to go where we can get our very little ones vaccinated. But this is another step forward. This is one more step towards herd immunity. We can protect our children. This is one more step forward towards having, you know, our children go to birthday parties and Christmas parties and, you know, intermingle without masks and without, you know, a fear of them getting very sick or ending up in the hospital or getting their parents sick and getting their grandparents sick. So this is a great move forward. Children have a very low rate of very serious infection, but they are a very significant part. They play a very significant part in transmitting the virus. So we are really hoping that with this vaccination drive of vaccinating 5 to 11 year olds, we will get the community transmission down even more significantly.
It's incredibly exciting. I think we've all been waiting for this to happen. And Jenny, you shared with us that your children were part of a trial. And so they're already vaccinated. And so how does that feel for you as a mother, you know, to know that they're already protected?
Well, I actually posted about it on my Facebook page, just to send the message to parents that are now making their appointments or are considering making their appointments. From the perspective of someone that has had the lucky fortune to be able to vaccinate her children before it was released to the general public, I have to say, once I verified that they were actually vaccinated, I got their antibody test to make sure that they didn't get the placebo. The sense of relief and just overwhelming emotion about the fact that it felt kind of like the end of this terrible journey that we've all been through. You know, we've been struggling to stay safe. We've been home. We've been, you know, avoiding large crowds. We don't go eating inside restaurants. And after all of that fight to finally be at the end and to be, you know, as close to protected as we can be was just such a sigh of relief for me and my family. So we're looking forward to getting back out into the world. My kids, they haven't been anywhere for, you know, almost 2 years. And so we're ready to get out and do some traveling and go out to some, you know, events and things like that. And all this is just so welcome. And my kids are excited. I'm excited. We're just so grateful that we have science to thank for the vaccine.
Absolutely. And I mean, clearly the three of us are all on board with this and appreciate that we have this opportunity now. But we do know there's a segment of our population that are opposed to vaccinations. And then there's a segment also that have had their children vaccinated, but are opposed to this vaccine. And then, you know, Dr. Kapur, you were just sharing that there's also a segment of the population that works the other way, that they've been anti-vaxxers, but they're showing up for this vaccine. Can you share a little more about that with us and what you're seeing in your clinic in regards to people's enthusiasm or not around this vaccine?
Yes. So we are very blessed. A large chunk of our population is really excited. And everybody who has my personal cell phone has already texted me between last night and today to ask about when are we going to schedule vaccines. And so a large portion of our population is very excited. But we do have a portion of population that does not want to get the vaccine. They are very hesitant. The good news is that once you come to your pediatrician's office and have a discussion about it, or you are open about telling your pediatrician, hey, I don't feel comfortable getting the vaccine, I feel like half the battle is won, because that means we can have a dialogue. The problem that I feel we are facing is that people are not coming to have a conversation with their physicians. See, before the polarization in society and, you know, you would go to your doctor and you would talk to your doctor would tell you, these are the shots you need, or this is the blood work you need, this is the stress test you need to get your colonoscopy, you need to get your mammogram to take care of you, you need to get your flu shot. And you would be like, okay, fine. It didn't matter if you were Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, did not matter. But unfortunately, I think that's the biggest problem we are facing, is the loss of trust. And, you know, when sometimes I feel that when a person is seeing me, especially a brown woman with an accent, all they see is that. And they don't see now the pediatrician there. They are seeing that, oh, this is a brown woman with accent. Of course she's gonna say, get vaccinated. But what does she know? Or the misinformation out there that I have heard from a few patients is, gee, you are gonna say to get, tell us to get vaccinated because you're getting paid by Pfizer and Moderna to do that.
Which is not true, right?
None of the doctors are getting paid. None of the offices are getting paid to do any of these vaccines. The vaccines are coming from the state. They are federally provided. So we are not paying for the vaccines and we are not getting any money for the vaccine. Every vaccine administration is paid for. We get paid by the insurance companies or the federal government to administer the vaccine, which is literally like, I think, less than $10 a patient, mm-hmm. which is less than the cost a clinic has to take to run the operation of giving the vaccine. Just paying your staff, paying your doctors to be there, buying the equipment, to be able to, the needles and the alcohol swabs and the band-aids, everything together costs more than what we make. So it is an operation that all clinics, whether it's with adults or with children, they are operating because they believe and they know that science is behind it and they understand the scientific process and they believe strongly in the vaccine. We don't need to believe in it. I mean, we have data and data and data that has proven that it is the right thing to do. And that's the only reason we are doing it.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, that's a really good point. And Jenny, I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, your work with Immunize Texas and, you know, sort of this anti-vaccine movement that we're seeing in Texas, because that movement is, you know, creating this contradictory atmosphere almost within, you know, not only the misinformation campaign, but what we're seeing from the government. What I read is that, for example, federal PPP loans that people got at the beginning of the pandemic, there are five anti-vax groups that got $850,000 right, from those loans. One of those groups is in Texas, and they received $166,000 in a PPP federal loan. So, you know, what we're seeing from the government, you know, is you know, money going to these groups in that way of support, which when people are hesitant and they're digging into this, that can be one of those things that leads them to believe, well, why is the government giving them money if they're really spreading all this misinformation? And so, Jenny, I know that you're incredibly active in the legislature when it comes to, you know, this movement and are really knowledgeable. What are your thoughts there? And how do we, you know, fight this information that's coming out and this choice that people are making?
This information that's coming out and this choice that people are making.
Well, I'll start by saying anti-vaxxers have been around as long as vaccines have been around. This is not a new thing, but what we've seen with the pandemic, we naively thought at the beginning of pandemic that this would be the time where society would recognize the importance of vaccines and we'd all rally behind it and we'd all unite behind it. But what we've seen is really kind of the opposite. The pandemic became a catalyst for anti-vaccine activists to become a central stage issue. Whereas in the past, they may have been something that was considered more of a fringe issue. Now they are the center of the conversation. They have been, I mean, they've been active at the legislature for a very long time, but now they're getting some movement, they're getting some traction, and they're really starting to shape politics, which is a very scary thing for all Texans, you know. We need to fight back. And to go to your question, I think that what we need to do is really have more and more people openly saying that they support vaccines, because what the anti-vaxxers are good at is making their voice very loud, even though they represent a very small percentage of Texas. So by being good at social media and things like putting out YouTube videos and making these statements that sound very incendiary and so that they're very easily shared and become viral, that's how they've kind of overblown their presence in Texas, right? They've made themselves seem bigger than they really are and more influential. But if you really look at the data, they're not that really, they're not a big part of our society. They represent a very small percentage of Texans. The vast majority of Texans do vaccinate their children and they are supportive of vaccines and they understand science, but they don't really necessarily get activist about it. They don't talk about it on their social media. They don't talk to friends and family. So that's something we've always tried to encourage our members and supporters to do, is be that person that brings it up when you're in at a dinner party or at a birthday party. I'm always joking that I'm that person at kids' birthday parties that when people have questions about vaccines, they end up talking to me about it. I don't even try. I usually try to go to birthday parties and just be like another mom. But at some point, someone will come up to me and say, hey, aren't you that immunized Texas person? I have some questions for you. And honestly, I'm very glad that people do that, because this is how we're going to change people's hearts and minds, is through these one-on-one conversations. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's all of the things happening at the legislature. We fight on that level, obviously, to fight back the misinformation and make sure good public health policy continues to move forward. But in terms of the population and what we're seeing with this hesitancy, it's really about people talking to people. That's what we see with the data and the statistics about how people make their decisions, especially when it comes to healthcare. It's really about those one-on-one contacts. So the more people speak about vaccines or express how grateful they are to be vaccinated or talk about how wonderful it is to be back out in society after a global pandemic now that they're vaccinated, the more we can change the temperature of the room and really get people to appreciate the science and really, you know, embrace vaccines and hopefully get vaccinated.
Well, and we know that, you know, we're always the most influential in our own circles. So that's, you know, a really valuable point. And also to your point, it's only about 22% of the population that's choosing to not vaccinate their children, or that's what the data shows at the moment. But in a complexity of that layer is that a lot of those people, and even sort of a smaller fringe of that, really consider it part of their identity. It's not necessarily about the vaccine. It's about who they are and their identity. And penetrating that, it becomes a struggle, you know, because there isn't the opportunity for the conversation. like you were just talking about. And so I wonder, Jyoti, you know, what are your thoughts when you're talking to a parent or somebody, you know, that sort of identifies that way? What are some valuable talking points that, that we can share with people to sort of help them see that, you know, maybe this is safe and maybe they don't need to be as concerned as they think they do?
I think one of the biggest things that we as people do, and I think it's everybody, is that we associate a lot of things to an identity. Like if, let's say, if I know that somebody is a Republican, and I will automatically give them 10 things that I know that they're going to be about, you know, or if somebody is an anti-vaxxer, I'm like, okay, you don't believe in science, you don't do this, you don't do this. So, and that judgment comes across. So I think the biggest help that I've had is to take a deep breath and then also know that I have to work actively to not judge and to listen. You know, I think as a society and as people, we need to open our minds to listening. And that has been the biggest thing about having discussions is with patients. One of the biggest things, if I'm going to see somebody who's not vaccinated their child and I'm seeing them for the first time, I'm not going to jump on to vaccines right away. I will expect them to be defensive about it. So, and I don't want them to feel judged. I want them to trust me, because only when they trust me, they will believe in what I tell them and what I advise them. And then they will open their heart to me and talk to me about it. So that has been the most important thing. The other thing that has been really advantageous for me is that I was born and raised in India, and I have seen vaccine preventable diseases. One of my big medical school project was on maternal mortality rate and child mortality rate in children less than 5 years old. That's the highest. And I have personal stories of my own family. My mom's mom, my maternal grandmother, who I never met, died when they were very young from tetanus. My cousin, my oldest cousin in my family, my dad's side of the family, he has polio. So I know the burden of vaccine preventable diseases, and I'm able to convey that to the parents. And I think that's a big thing. That one of the points that I get a lot is that, weren't there much fewer vaccines when we grew up? Why are there so many vaccines today? And my answer to that always is, yes, absolutely, we had fewer vaccines, but we also died at a much higher rate, much sooner than we do now. You know, now people expect to live to 75, 80, 90. We didn't do that when we were growing up. That was not expected. The mortality and the morbidity rate has changed. And so has the infant mortality rate. So those are the points that helped me a lot.
Sure. And I mean, I have to admit that when I had my first child, you know, and was looking at the vaccine schedule, and it, you know, it's brand new to motherhood, it terrified me, right? And I have never been hesitant to that. But, you know, it's your infant, and you're, you know, and thank goodness I had a phenomenal pediatrician that was very understanding of my concerns. But I can see how people in that moment are easily swayed if they don't have somebody they feel like they can talk to like that. So I certainly get it. And I get having grace around that conversation with people. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about herd immunity. Like, what do we need to have our society protected from COVID, essentially? I mean, we know this virus is going to mutate and, you know, do things similar to what we see annually with the flu. But what are we looking for numbers wise to get to a place where people feel comfortable that maybe we're really limiting this virus in our communities?
Well, I'm not sure that they have an actual number yet. The studies are ongoing. You know, when you look at something like measles, you want something close to 95%. If you're looking at other diseases, it can be different. So we don't really have a good grasp of that because the data is still coming in, right? We're still in the middle of the pandemic and we don't really know. I think, though, you know, we shouldn't get focused so much on the number, because I'll be honest, I don't know that Texas will actually get to that number. So we have to, at a certain point, you know, do what we can to protect ourselves, proceed with caution, you know, look at how community transmission is going. You know, I'm so grateful that Austin at least has a stage system so that people can check in and see what it's like in their area. Not all places in Texas have that. So it's sort of a guessing game, depending on where you live. And then, of course, even with vaccinations on a city level, it doesn't necessarily describe your individual community. We know that there are clusters of people who choose to go one way or the other. Depending on where you are, you might live in a community where everybody is vaccinating, which is great. But you might also live in a community where people are more prone to listening to the misinformation and choosing not to vaccinate themselves or their children. So one of the things, for instance, that Immunize Texas has always been a proponent of is trying to get better data so that people can make those decisions based on their community numbers. And we can talk about the legislature. That would probably take up a whole nother podcast. But, you know, it's been rough even to get that kind of basic data available to regular everyday people. Hopefully, as we kind of emerge from this pandemic, we'll start to see public health authorities taking more of a stance on public health. They've unfortunately been really deauthorized in a lot of ways by the current administration. Hopefully they will be able to come back as leaders in the community protecting public health. And then, of course, for groups like Immunize Texas and other pro-vaccine organizations, hopefully we can continue to advocate so that we can learn more about communities, we can get better data, we can allow people to make the best decision for themselves when it comes to how they behave in society, whether or not they choose to vaccinate, those kinds of things, because right now it's a little bit of a mess. I'm going to be honest, a little bit of a mess, and people are struggling. I try to give as much information as I can. I'm sure Dr. Kapoor does the same thing. We're all doing our best to educate people and give them the best information that we can.
Sure. And so that kind of brings me into, you know, vaccine mandates, right? And that's a lot of the, you know, bills that we saw this legislative session were opposed to mandates here in Texas. You know, we do know that every state does allow for a religious exemption. Texas also is one of 18 states that allows an exemption for personal reasons.
Not all states allow religious exemption.
Oh, they don't? Okay.
There are four now, I think, that do.
Yeah. That don't allow any exemptions at all?
Only medical.
Okay, that's great. So, you know, my question, though, is how important are, you know, these vaccine mandates in a state that allows for these exemptions, you know, in a state that is not putting pressure or taking away the powers of our public health and local authorities? What we saw in New York recently was, you know, 10,000 police and firefighters that walked off the job, but eventually when push came to shove, it was only 34 that actually quit. So, Dr. Kapoor, what are your thoughts? Like, do we need mandates in place to protect our communities? Or, you know, is this something that we're just going to have to wait and see how it comes out in the wash?
Listen, mandates have been in place for years and years and years. I mean, when I went into residency, and then when I worked in universities and jobs, I've had so many TB tests that I don't even remember. I have had drug screens, you know, and I have had flu shot every year. I mean, it's not a choice, and nobody ever has questioned that, and they work very effectively. And definitely, so I don't know why it's even a question that people in high-risk professions should be definitely mandated, you know, or organizations should be allowed to mandate a vaccine. I don't know what's different about COVID vaccine from the flu vaccine. But that being said, absolutely, mandates help. We do see a fair share of people who do not want to get vaccinated, but they will get their children vaccinated because they want them to go to certain schools and they can't qualify for religious exemptions. And we will not give them medical exemptions because they don't have a medical condition that exempts them. So And then they have to get the vaccine. So it does play a role. But that being said, it's like a fine, you know, fine road to walk on, because again, it's about listening, right? The moment you force people, you're not listening. You're just ordering them. And that backfires too. So, you know, so I'm sure, you know, Jeannie has better insight on that than me about how to walk that fine line. But yes, traditionally, mandates have been there. They have been very effective, and they have never been a problem.
I mean, I wonder how much this also plays into, you know, consumerism, how we choose to show up and where we choose to show up. I know for me, I'm much more likely to see a healthcare, you know, provider that I know is vaccinated with this. I'm much more likely to take my kids places where I know everybody's been vaccinated, even after they have the opportunity to be vaccinated themselves. I'm still gonna be cautious in that way. It's still gonna matter to me. And so, Jeannie, what are your thoughts on mandates and, you know, what you think we need to do there, or what you'd like to see happen in our state?
Well, so there's a couple things I wanna say about it. I mean, Dr. Kapoor is right. We've had mandates in the state for all kinds of things. And unfortunately, like we've seen with some of the other things that Republicans have pushed forward in this past sessions. It's all about the language. And sometimes a word becomes a buzzword and one side co-opts it and kind of twists the meaning. And I think mandate is one of those words. You know, when I talk about it, I sort of try to stay away from that word. And I talk about it as being a job requirement, right? I mean, we all have job requirements for different jobs. And I think, especially when you look at the healthcare field, of course, we want to have our healthcare employees vaccinated, because they're there servicing the public and taking care of their health. And we want them to be healthy. We don't want to get sick from our nurse or our physician being in proximity to us. So, of course, we want to make sure they're in the best health that they can be. And then, of course, I think from a broader perspective, what really bothers me about this push to ban vaccine mandates, it violates what Texas is supposed to be about when it comes to private businesses. We are supposed to be a pro-business state. It's something that the Republican Party has said over and over again, and it just really frustrates me that on the one hand, they love to celebrate all the advances, all of the progress we've made as a pro-business state. We have companies coming into Texas from other states, and we talk about that in a very positive way. But then at the same time, we don't actually treat them in the way that they should be treated, giving them the autonomy to make the right decisions for themselves. Of course, there will be businesses that don't choose to have a vaccine mandate in place, but there are plenty that will, and we should respect that because we are supposed to be Texas. And unfortunately, again, that's been really twisted, and now we have businesses who have their hands tied. And I always like to point out, yes, there will be businesses that will stand up and say, you know what, we don't really care what this executive order says. We don't care what this bill says. We're going to keep doing the right thing for our employees, for our customers, for the public. But unfortunately, there will be lots of mom and pop shops all over Texas that will not be able to do that, even if they want to. Not everyone has a lawyer on staff. Not everyone has a whole legal team that can stand up and fight. And that's the unfortunate thing. And so I think there's a lot of businesses, just like you were saying, as a consumer, we want to make decisions with our money and where it goes that sort of reflect our values and our ideals. And unfortunately, there are a lot of cases where we may not be able to do that because these mom and pop shops cannot, you know, do the right thing that's right for the public and their consumers. And unfortunately, we're just stuck with this mess again. I mean, it's just really unfortunate that it's like this, because I am like you. I would love to be able to support those businesses that are being strong on vaccines, being strong on public health, and feel safe when I am a patron there, you know, when I'm eating there or shopping there. I would love to have that feeling. But, you know, we're in an ideological battle in Texas right now. And
100%. Unfortunately, our statewide government right now claims to be small government until it's something they disagree with, and then they want to own it. And so until we can, you know, change some of the people that are in power in our state, this is what we're looking at. And unfortunately, you're right. It is the small businesses that will pay the price. But what does that look like for our schools? I mean, schools have always had vaccine mandates. So, you know, do we think that they're going to have the power? Will there be some that stood up like they did with the mask mandates and do this? I mean, I'd love to hear from both of you on that. Maybe, Jyoti, you could start.
I think that will also be an uphill battle, knowing the direction that Texas is going in. I know there are like AIST, you know, we know that they wanted to support the mask mandate. So I'm sure they will want the vaccine mandate. But, you know, will they be able to get it? I don't know. You know, the way I am, and I'm going to just, you know, take it a little tangential right now. The way I have been approaching the vaccine, COVID vaccine especially, is the pandemic now is, I was telling a mom the other day in the clinic, I was like, right now, if somebody chooses not to vaccinate themselves or their child or their family, it is a public health crisis. It affects community health. You know, with the way things are going, ideally, we should have all gotten vaccinated, followed all the mandates, isolation, and this pandemic would be over. Well, we are beyond that. Now, I feel like if we can achieve the state where we choose to vaccinate, we choose to follow science, and it becomes a personal health crisis, not a public health crisis. If I choose not to vaccinate myself and I get COVID, it's a personal health crisis. It's not a crisis to everybody else, just like flu is, you know. Mm-hmm. If I'm vaccinated for flu, if somebody else has flu, they most likely will not send me to the hospital. They'll probably get me sick, but they won't send me to the hospital. I get flu every year, because I work in a profession where children are coughing and sneezing on me. So, but I have never, ever had to go to the hospital for it. And that's where I am trying to reach. So that's the whole thing for me. But the schools, I don't know. I hope they are able to do the mandate.
And what do you think? What's your prediction, Jenny?
I think it's going to really depend on the CDC and whether they place the COVID vaccine on the required list as opposed to the recommended list. We could see it end up be like HPV vaccine, where it's recommended, and so it's not part of what's required for people to register for school and attend public school. And then the other issue, which again is a whole nother podcast waiting to happen, is about really our vaccine exemption process in Texas. Honestly, in Texas, to get a non-medical vaccine exemption is actually easier than getting your children vaccinated. So we have to work on things from multiple angles if we want to ensure that our communities are healthy. So it's a complex question. It's a complex answer. I'm just waiting to see what will happen, really, from multiple sides before I think we can have an idea of what will happen in Texas.
Well, and I think that it's something that, you know, next legislative session will be front and center. And so a lot's going to happen between now and then, you know, and that could really determine what we see. Well, I want to thank you both, not only for being here today, but for your efforts in this fight. Jenny, the work that you do with Immunize Texas, and of course, Jyoti, the work you do as a pediatrician and to educate this community. And as mothers, we're all in this together, you know, for the safety of our community and our kids. So thank you for joining today and sharing such valuable insight with us. And as always, thank you to Progress Texas for hosting this podcast for us today. We look forward to seeing you all next week at the same time, same place. Have a good week. Get your kids vaccinated. We can do it now.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Texas Blue Action Podcast, a production in affiliation with Progress Texas. Texas Blue Action is founded on progressive grassroots action, focused on year-round neighborhood organizing and committed to building sustainable democratic infrastructure in Texas. We turn out the voters that the Texas GOP fears the most. Production by me, Chris Mosier. Theme music generously provided by James McMurtry. Join Texas Blue Action at blueactiondems.com and also on Twitter and Facebook. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you again next week.